I'm driving, so my camera's off, so forgive me for that. But yeah, I would have to say, I mean, there's a lot of good things that come out of it, but the biggest I would think that is consistency. Like, just take what you're taught from your coach, take what you pick up from the group calls, from Telegram, you know, all the things that are coming at you. And regardless of what life throws at you, just be consistent. It will come. You know, it does work. You can do it if you just you know, you got to stay consistent. And so I had a lot of things come at me, a career change, you know, a head-on collision literally at 60 miles an hour. Like, whatever
Wow.
came at me, you know, with Coach Chris, it was consistency and just showing up every day and leaning in it. And so that would be my number one thing I would say is just consistency.
Awesome. Now I'm looking forward to it. That's one thing I
That's
do
great.
like is consistency. Brick
Well,
by
you have
brick.
a whole team to keep you accountable.
Yeah.
On tonight's call, I'm going to pass it over to Greg. Oh, go ahead, Greg.
I think there's is there another new person in the group?
You caught me. Hi, I'm here.
Oh, I so sorry I missed you. Welcome, Josh.
Nice to meet everyone.
Nice to meet you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Just started, got my kickoff call today. My coach is Steve. I'm in I lived the last 10 years in Toronto, but I'm up in Ottawa at the moment.
Oh, congrats. Well, welcome to the community. Steve's a military coach, so you know he's pretty tough, but you can handle it. His smile makes it look like he's innocent, but he's pretty tough. Okay, so tonight we have Greg presenting on blood work, and so some of you guys that are new into our community, you'll hear Ben and our coaches speak a lot about how important blood work is to start off, and just the differentiation of what we can see when we do look at blood work to highlight what we can improve from a molecular level. Ben is going to be very much better spoken than I am, but from a molecular level, because everything starts with the inside out, as well as consistency and hard work. So I'm going to pass it over to Greg and welcome to the new guys and enjoy the call.
Good afternoon, guys, and welcome to the two new guys. You'll do great. Steve's all right. You'll be fine. So I'll take you through what I'm going to do tonight is I'll briefly touch on some of the tests that we offer within the MI community, but I'll also touch on two or three case studies of people that have used this service before and obviously have got really good results through that, right? Let me just share my screen. And I'll show you. Come on. I think my laptop is ready to give up on me. Hold on. Right. Anyway, while that loads slowly, we'll talk about stuff like when things get a little bit more complicated, right? Because for a lot of you guys, and I know the new guys, you'll learn this relatively quickly as you start to deal with your coaches. But let me take that back. I'll be ready now. But there is certain circumstances where the standard stuff that we tend to apply for you guys. So when we talk about training modalities, when we talk about stress, sleep, caloric intake, protein intake, fiber intake, they're all at very much work 95% of the time in order for most people to achieve whatever their goal is. But there is circumstances that occur where things do get a little bit more complicated. And having a little peek underneath the hood to try and figure out what that problem is can be really, really enlightening. to figure out why you feel the way you do. The stuff that we do is generally not involved with disease, right? So we don't treat disease. We try and make you as optimal as possible through these tests. So as you'll see throughout this, I picked three different people on purpose, right? So just to show you how the dietary approaches, supplemental approaches and lifestyle approaches can be a little bit different from person to person when you're trying to figure out what's going on. So what are we going to try and learn today? We'll talk briefly about the tests that we tend to perform. Now, there is new ones coming in. So I believe we have set up with a company that are going to offer epigenetic testing as well. So there will be genetic testing available down the line. And I'm sure Sarah will speak, will touch to that briefly at the end. We'll talk about like kind of when and why you should use these things. Then the application will be the three case studies I'm going to discuss. So one of the gentlemen's actually on the call, Dom, which will be nice to talk about his story. So let's talk about the tests that we tend to offer. The vast majority of the time, comprehensive blood tests, the ones that you get from your doctor, are the most appropriate place to start. Now, we offer a much more extensive list than most doctors do. So we tend to look a little bit deeper to try and figure out what's going on. So when you go, and not that there's anything significantly wrong with a simple approach, but especially when we look at cardiovascular risk in men, there's far more to it than just the cholesterol portion of it. There's plenty of other markers that can give us indication of something else that's going on. So when we look at, like, as I've discussed previously on loads of different calls, we did a cardiovascular risk one, we did a erectile dysfunction one, mitochondria, gut health. We've done loads of different ones in the past where we discussed all these things individually. But particularly with cardiovascular risk for men, it is something that has to be taken really, really seriously. It is most likely what's going to get us. Apologies. It's most likely what's going to get us. So knowing all the different markers. And when we look at something like cholesterol, 50% of men who have heart attacks don't have high cholesterol. So it is not the only marker. It's an important one, but it is not the only marker that we see in a comprehensive blood analysis. Okay. So we tend to offer far more variation in terms of the markers that we track. It also is tried and tested for decades. So all the fancy functional medicine tests that we see floating around now, the application of them and the validity, for a lot of them, we don't really know yet. So when people come to me initially and they'll go, oh, I've got this test I got from a functional medicine doctor. And I'm like, okay, but this by itself tells us very little, right? It's very specific. And if there's nothing really jumps off the page at you, then there's very little application you could do with them. With the blood analysis, you can see so much of what's going on in a client. So that's normally where I like to start personally when people come to work with me for slightly more complex issues. We tend to use stool analysis as well. Now, with a stool analysis, they have their limitations as well. So every person who has a digestive complaint at some stage in their life will go, I need to get a stool test. And in some cases, absolutely, they can be really helpful. But the important thing to remember about a stool analysis is it only tells us what's going on in the large intestine, because technically we're checking your poop, right? So we don't necessarily know what's going on above that. So when we look at the small intestine or the stomach, it won't give us that indication. It can give us hints as to what's going on above, but it doesn't tell us directly. So people always reach to the parasite. I've got a parasite. And in certain circumstances, yeah, but it's rare. Like the only one I've seen since working with MI was one of Chris's clients who came to work with him for muscle gain for 6 months. And we ended up spending 6 months trying to kill quite a nasty little parasite. So he never got to enjoy any of that, any of the fun stuff in regards to it. So stool analysis can be useful if you've got digestive complaints, for sure. And the last one is an organic acid test. So this is kind of like the functional medicine's answer to a comprehensive blood test. So it'll tell us like a lot of nutrient deficiencies. It'll tell us about mitochondrial dysfunction, which we've touched on loads of times in the past. But also it can, and how accurate it is, we don't really know yet, but it'll give us a general idea of neurotransmitters. So like serotonin and dopamine, these have, when they get broken down, we tend to weed them out. So we do get some indication of what's going on, but those, so like dopamine and serotonin also get made, they don't just get made in the brain, they get made in the periphery as well. But one really good thing about an organic acid test is it picks up fungus really well, which a stool test doesn't do that accurately. So it can be used as an adjunct with a stool test. So we offer all these tests in terms of packages. So we've got the silver and the gold package. The silver will tend to be two of them, and then the gold package is all three. And that gives us a pretty wide-ranging approach that we can take to whatever your issue may be. Now, onto some of the slightly more interesting thing, and this will kind of show you guys how certain diets are appropriate in certain places. We're all here predominantly for fat loss and muscle gain, and those rules tend not to shift as much as some people might want to think. So it's generally speaking, like, you want to look after, like I spoke about at the start, you want to talk about stress, you want to talk about sleep, caloric intake, protein intake, all those kind of things, and then training modalities. But with these slightly more complicated cases, we can see that actually that may not be the case. So Dave didn't want to share his name, but he is one of Gav's clients. And he had a history of depression, poor sleep, and digestive complaints. Now, he had a pre-story to this, which was quite interesting. So he had been overweight for quite a significant amount of time. He swapped to a carnivore diet. And before this, again, he had really bad digestive complaints as well. He swapped to a carnivore diet and it solved everything for him. That's not how you spell effect. But he swapped to a carnivore diet and it worked brilliantly for him. So he lost all the weight, his digestive complaints went away, but he had to stay strictly to carnivore. Otherwise, the symptoms would come back. And slowly over time, the digestive complaints returned anyway. So he couldn't quite figure out what the problem was. So we did stool and blood markers with him. So he had no issues in regards to his blood test, which isn't common. You normally find a lot of issues with blood tests that you can work on initially before even the stool gets back. But with him, he had a lot of issues going on in terms of his stool test. And it jumped out straight away. So look at the bottom. When you don't have to worry about what all that means, it gets fairly complex, even for a simple soul like myself. But if you look at the bacteria at the bottom, it's called D. pigger. But basically what that does is it converts hydrogen or sulfide to hydrogen sulfide within his gut. So this guy had hydrogen sulfide dominated SIBO. And what was causing this to proliferate and grow was actually his really high protein diet. So like, this is one of the circumstances where we can see that actually for him, a high protein diet was not appropriate. So I got on the phone to Gav, because Gav's client, I was like, look, he was on 2 to 3 grams per pound of body weight. So he was on about 500 grams a day of protein, a massive amount, because he had to try and increase his calories in order to gain weight. His goal was muscle gain at this stage. So I mentioned to Gav, like, we're going to have to put him, because like, the ideal diet for this is vegetarian. So take out all sulfur-containing foods, all of them, and protein or meat is the dominant source of that. But that wasn't an option for him. Like, there was no way he was going to completely flip his diet. So we put him on, there you go, how do we fix it? We put him on certain antimicrobials, which act kind of like antibiotics, but they're a little bit more selective. So it's like natural forms. They're herbs and spices generally in concentrated forms. And we pulled his protein as much as he could, what Gav did, pulled his protein as much as he was willing to do. Now, with him, we completely eliminated his digestive complaints. Now, it took about 12 weeks, but the main thing for him as like an adjunct to that is he now gets consistent sleep through the night without waking. His sleep score went from 60 to the 90s just from this plan. So we use certain herbal antimicrobials that have been shown to be really effective at killing hydrogen sulfide producing bacteria. So his diet, if I had a clean slate to work with him, I would have changed him from all protein to an entire vegetarian diet during this process. But obviously that wasn't possible with him because he just wasn't willing to do it. And that's fine. But we still got the results we wanted to. So this shows in one circumstance that protein is not ideal for this person. So it shows when things get complicated, the dietary approach can get a little bit more complicated and a little bit more nuanced. So the second one is Nikki. So Nikki works with Gav as well. He got what's called post-infection IBS. So he had food poisoning. I think he was traveling at the time. He got a really bad case of food poisoning. And the symptoms never went away. So I know we all track, like a lot of us on here track HRV. We want our HRV to be as high as possible in order to aid in recovery and the and parasympathetic tone and all these fancy things, right? But his tanked. So he went from 100 plus to 30 or 40, I'm sure. I remember the exact numbers. But his HRV absolutely tanked. And for love nor money, he couldn't get it to come back up. He couldn't sleep properly and his digestion just never returned. So he had loose stools all the time. So we did fairly similar testing, comprehensive blood test and stool analysis. Now, his case was very different to Dave's before. So we convinced he had post-infection IBS, extremely common in people, actually. It can be the initial thing that causes IBS in a lot of people. But again, with him, there was very little to take from his bloods. But for him, which I'm not really selling bloods very well in this one, right? But they do generally are the most effective. But what you can see is that his stool told the story very much for him. So he popped, right? So if you look, I know like these numbers don't mean anything to you guys, but if you went back to Dave, all his bacteria was really high. With Nikki, his was flatlined. So he had very little bacteria in his gut. And he flagged for two different parasites. Now, these aren't technically parasites, right? So there is some real nasty ones. The one I mentioned earlier, Entamoeba histolytica, is the one that Chris's client had. That's a nasty parasite. These two are like, I guess, opportunistic. So when you have really low good bacteria, these things tend to proliferate and grow. Okay, so with him, we had to take a very different approach. We couldn't atom bomb him with antimicrobials at all, because although it might have solved the problem initially, his chance of reinfection would have been very high. So we had to give him things to help proliferate and grow his bacteria. So it was a very much the opposite approach that we took with Dave before. And the results for him were pretty amazing as well. So his gut health was better than it's ever been. He's always had a problem with it. And his digestion now is picture perfect. And his HRV is now back above 100 again. So he's able, his goal, Nikki's goal was to grow muscle. But in the state he was in, he just couldn't train effectively in order to do it. He also couldn't take in enough calories to do it because of the issues he had with his gut. So it shows the difference that you can find. So with him, so if you think from client one, so Dave, no protein was the goal. Nikki could stay on high protein. He was absolutely fine. His idea was to add fiber, right? Add as much fiber and different variations of fiber as possible and a few different nutraceuticals as well to help. Okay, so it shows the difference. Now, the interesting one, because he's on this call, is Dom's case. So I didn't actually write it down for Dom, so I can kind of explain him in a little bit more detail. Dom's one was really interesting. He has a history of neurocognitive issues. So I believe it's autism and I did ask beforehand if I could say this, autism and ADHD. So three, what's the third one? Schizophrenic.
No, bipolar one disorder.
Bipolar one disorder, right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So his one was really interesting. So he did his blood test as well and nothing came back. So nothing really flagged. He had a slightly off thyroid, which was interesting, and it's something that we dealt with, but it was something that was a little bit more, so like when they looked at him, we didn't see much in terms of blood, stool, organic acid tests, nothing. But we did like a really comprehensive history with Dom. And one of the things that just jumped out straight away with him was, I remember going back through his history and asking him, and I'm thinking, right, so cognitive issues, what's the issue? It's like, have you ever had head trauma, Dom? And he told me that he was in a car accident. How long ago was it?
This was 1996, the first big accident. Yeah.
Right. So nearly 20 years ago. And I asked him how long, I asked him if this knocked him unconscious. And he said, yeah, it did. And I was like, for how long? And he said, 2 days-ish, wasn't it? So give or take 2 days. So the first thing that came to me was neuroinflammation from head trauma. It's the thing that you tend to see now in a lot of like American football players is coming into a major, it's coming into the mainstream a lot. They're finding it with soccer players even. They find it with a lot of rugby players that these issues tend to occur. But with a massive amount of head trauma, what happens is you have what are called glial cells in your brain. Everyone concentrates on neurons in the brain, right? Oh, you lose neurons. You do, of course, from head trauma. But with him, prime glial cells, it's called. So your brain almost becomes inflammatory and it stays that way as a protective mechanism. But it loses all control of its ability to process and use glucose or sugar for fuel in those circumstances. So I asked, I said to Gav, I was like, we're going to have to put him on a ketogenic diet. It's been shown to be the most effective way to deal with these circumstances time and time again. Gav was ahead of the game and he said he's already on it. So he was on a ketogenic diet and he's lost buckets of weight on the ketogenic diet as well. But also we used some targeted nutraceuticals in order to lower that brain inflammation. And within, I believe I got on a call with him about 4 weeks later, and just his general interaction with me was a whole different game from it. He completely changed in that amount of time. And it was amazing to see with him. And I thanks Dom for letting me share your story, because it was one of the most interesting ones, because we actually didn't really have anything to work with in terms of blood work. And we just had to, because with something like neuroinflammation, there's no way to test it. This is a bit of a guess. And we guessed right, it seems to be so far. Seems to be doing all right. So they're kind of three different circumstances, how you can see how three different diets were needed for the different cases. So we had something that probably would have needed a vegetarian diet, something that could have stayed higher protein, and then Dom, who has to do a really high fat diet in order to have proper function. So we can see the variation from person to person. And this kind of shows how effective real deep diving into blood tests or symptoms or history can be if people have a problem that they can't solve. I hope that makes sense, guys. There's also just a heads up. So this offer is available to anybody who wants to book on through MI. I believe Sarah has the details, but also we've got links now. So if anybody wants to track their blood sugar levels, we have a link with Levels. And they do all the different kinds. And then we also have a link to Oura Ring now as well. So if anybody's needs to track their HRV or sleep, that's another option for you guys as well. Has anybody got any questions for me? That's the end of my ranting.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Chris.
You mentioned that you guys have a connection to Oura Ring. Now, is that just for purposes of our coaches to have more of an insight? Is that what you're referring to what's going on with us?
Yeah, so it would give us insight into what's going on with you quite well. So, do you know what the Oura Ring is?
Yeah, I have one, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. So like, if you already have one, you don't need the hookup. The hookup just means that you get a discount.
Got it. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Can we get levels in Canada? I don't think so yet. No, I'm almost sure. But if Sarah's still on the call, she might be able to answer that. I don't think so. She'll check. She doesn't think so. So, Gabe, what's the link between blood stool analysis? So, surprisingly, when you look at blood tests, there are indications to stool it or to digestive issues. So, you can see it in white blood cells. Generally, if there's a digestive problem, you see it most of the time in the immune system. If there's a digestive problem, so it doesn't tell you directly like a stool test will, but it does give really good indication. And do you look at historical data? If we have, yeah, of course, no problem. If you have historical stuff that you want to throw over my way, I'm more than happy to go through it. Anybody else? ECGM recommendation for Canadians. Honestly, like dealing with blood work and all this kind of stuff in Canada is the biggest pain in my ass. You just can't get anything there. But I'll try. So Joshua, I'll try and find out.
Greg, your email is coachgreg@muscleintelligence, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody, if anybody's got any questions, it doesn't have to be in terms of what we just discussed, but anything in terms of diet, nutrition, and lifestyle that you guys want to go through. So any questions that you have, I'm more than happy to sit here and answer them for you guys. So if there's anything specific that you want to go through, I'm more than happy to, if I know the answer.
Hi, yeah, I have a question about like condiments and things like that, because usually, like, you know, if you follow somebody like The Rock and stuff like that, like, he doesn't put any freaking condiments whatsoever. What are your thoughts on that? Like, I mean, I know it makes food like enhance the taste and things like that. What are your thoughts on that?
Personally, I don't necessarily have a problem with condiments. So, I mean, the major concern for a lot of them, especially if you're looking at stuff like if people are using a lot of oil and stuff like that, like you can massively jack up your calories. So that would be my only concern in terms of stuff like condiments is the sugar content of them. But generally speaking, if someone wants to add a little bit of condiments to their food and it's tracked in terms of their total intake, I don't necessarily have a problem with it as long as they can still hit their macros. I think if it's something that makes your food actually palatable, it allows you to stick to your plan for longer.
Hey, Greg.
I have a question. Oh, I'm sorry. Can I jump in real fast?
Yeah, so, I'll get you next, Henry. Go on, Spencer.
So whenever I stay super low carb and I'm eating I'm eating mostly meat. So I host karaoke for a living and I talk a lot very loudly. And what happens is over time, you know, after I run a couple of weeks on it, my voice gives out. Like I just don't have the endurance of my voice. It's like no matter how much water I drink, I can't, you know, I'm drinking salt water and I'm doing, you know, I'm trying to ingest salt as much as I can, but it's still my voice is just never hydrated. Does that make sense? Any tips for that?
Well, that's a tricky one. So is it just when you go low carb?
I mean, it's all the time, but it's worse when I go low carb, you could say.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting one. That's something I'll have to look into in a little bit more detail. Cause I don't really know.
Anybody else do low carb and they experience problems with voice? Like, you know, problems talking over time, if they're like public speaking or anything like that.
I've never heard it before.
No, I'm a singer in a rock and roll band, and I've never had any issues with it. You know, maybe try drinking like tea or something like, during in between.
That's something I'll look into for Spencer, though, because that's it's quite an interesting one.
Spence, I have a bunch of clients in a row. I used to do keto. I did keto solid for, gosh, like 3 years back in the day. And I experienced the same thing. By the end of like 6 or 7 hours of constantly talking with clients, I'd have no voice just by the end of that. And that's just close talking. That's, you know, a couple feet away from me. So I can imagine speaking loudly for long periods of time. I never found a solution for it, but one thought I just had, I actually have a friend who's a voice actor. So I'll see if he has any advice. And if he does, I'll let you know.
That's a good show. Thanks, Johnny.
Henry, I usually try to get 8 hours. I try to get 8 hours of sleep is my goal, is my sleep goal.
Henry, did you have a question?
All right, there I am. All right. I don't know why the microphone turns off on me, but can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Well, first of all, were you able to hear me when I was trying to address the gentleman with the voice problem?
Yeah, Rocker, you said you're in a rock and roll band?
Oh, so you did hear about you trying green tea? Okay, because I'm having trouble figuring out this app thing. But anyways, yeah. I have a question about the – I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead, buddy.
No, so yeah, I don't know if you've tried that about the green tea, but it helps out a lot. You know, people think I'm drinking Jack Daniels on stage, but I'm just drinking tea. But my question actually was about the Oura Ring. You guys mentioned it a couple of times, and me being the new guy on this, would that be a beneficial tool during this time for me?
I think so. Like, you'll notice like a lot of the fellas will put their hand up.
Right, that's why I'm asking.
So especially in terms of if recovery is a problem for you, so like it'll track what's called HRV. So HRV is just called heart rate variability.
Right.
So what that does is it'll track the time between the individual beats in your heart, because it shouldn't be consistent all the time. There should be like microseconds in the middle where it's like slightly different every time. So if it's really consistent, then it tells you that like you're not recovering effectively. So it means that you're what we'd call sympathetically toned. So you're overstressed. So it's a really good marker of stress. And the one thing that it does really well above, I'm pretty sure all other models that are out at the moment, is it tracks sleep extremely effectively. So like I know that's an issue for a lot of people. And even for people I know who claim to have good sleep, that when they actually start to track it, they realize that there's a lot they can do in order to improve it.
All right. I'll look into getting one of those then.
We can send you on the link for sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool. When I got it, do you know what? Like the main thing it did for me was it actually made me prioritize sleep more so than anything else. Because when I started to see crappy scores, I realized how much effect certain things in my life were having on it.
Right. That's the unfortunate part for me with sleep, because Coach Andrew and I had a discussion on it. Like, I go to sleep around like 8 o'clock at night, and I get up at 3:15 in the morning, and I don't know how much time that is, you know, of actual sleep that I get.
Mm.
But it would be interesting to know how much actual sleep. My girlfriend and I, we're very learning about sleep, about, you know, trying to keep the room at a cold temperature, making sure everything's blacked out, and yeah, like we want you to learn more. I even take this stuff by Bioptimizers, sleep powder. I'm trying to remember the name, but yeah, so I want to track my sleep because we both wake up still tired every morning.
Yeah, like it can be a game changer. Like not just the fact that obviously you can track it, but it means that you'll start to prioritize and you'll realize the things that are actually working for you as you give them time to see if they work.
Right, right. Okay, cool. That was my question.
No problem, Henry.
So I wanted to ask about that sleep question. So I had a sleep study done because I had been diagnosed with sleep apnea. Obviously that is a causation of, you know, being overweight. So with the O-ring, I'm not familiar with it. So from what I was told is like good sleep is like when you're dreaming, right? So like the rapid eye movements and things like that. So how does that ring track like you know, good sleep versus like mediocre sleep and things like that. I'd be curious to see that because, you know, when you have probes on you, that's a different, you know, scenario from like the O-ring, I would imagine. So, you know, so what is the benefits for that? Cause there's two types of good sleep, right? I mean, there's, you know, like you're deep into that dream and then you're in the rabbit hole. And then there's like, you know, polyphenary sleep, I guess, you know, you're just like not really deep into it.
Yeah, so like you're pretty much on point. And so like you'll have like, because it goes through phases throughout the evening. So you have people who have disturbed sleep, don't always get into REM because it takes a certain amount of time and a certain amount of phases until you get into REM sleep. So it'll track latency. So it'll track how long it actually takes you to fall asleep. It'll track deep sleep, which is the initial part, which is the first phase before REM sleep, I should say. And then it'll track REM sleep for you as well. Now, in regards to the probes, there will be like, don't get me wrong, it's not as accurate as obviously being in a sleep study. It's not going to be. There'll be an element of, so there'll be like, I can't remember what it was, but I'm going to say 10 to 15% difference. So it's not as effective as a sleep study, but it's the closest in terms of manual things that we can do from home.
And is this something that we wear all day long or can I take it off at work?
It does other things. So it'll track your heart rate as well, which is quite effective at. So like it's nice to have on all the time, but you don't have to wear it all the time. No.
Okay. Yeah, I don't like wearing jewelry at work.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, cool.
Hey, Greg, here's a thought for you, brother.
Go on.
Today you talked about the optimization of the microbiome and, you know, getting insights on a molecular microscopic level, right? Sometimes we're guilty of just looking for the quick fix, you know, and we believe that, you know, perhaps like a digestive enzyme and a probiotic will fix my issues, right? Like my constipation or my irregularities or my gassiness, my bloating, so on and so forth. Why would that quick fix not ideally work? And why would someone actually entertain getting labs instead of just going for something such as simple as like getting a probiotic and digestive enzymes?
Yeah, like that's a really good question, bud. Like, and don't get me wrong, stuff like probiotics and digestive enzymes, they're effective approaches, but the more I do this, the more I realize that probiotics can be very effective in a lot of different things. But the more I've been doing this, the more I realize that although digestive enzymes are effective, they tend to be a band-aid for the actual problem. So if you're not releasing digestive enzymes from your pancreas, there's a reason why. So replacing them is fine, but in long-term effects, you've got to get to the root cause of the problem most of the time. And that tends to be where most people fall down. So they lean on a supplement. And don't get me wrong, a lot of those supplements are needed to begin with. But realistically, you'd want to get to the stage where you're using food to propagate and proliferate good bacteria. But a lot of the time at the beginning, you do need a slightly more aggressive approach with supplements in order to get there.
So then basically what you're saying is if you're going to choose the route of masking the symptoms, that might cost you a couple $100 a month and you're going to need to lean in on that forever because you're just continuously masking the symptom, or you can make an investment to actually solve the root of the problem and then not need to lean in on that afterwards.
Yeah, so that would be a pretty good way of putting it, brother. Like, so you have a lot of people, and I know, use every powder and potion for years trying to figure out what their digestive problem is. Once they see an ad pop up on Instagram, they'll try it. And they've spent hundreds and hundreds and thousands of dollars trying to solve it themselves. When a lot of the time, if you actually just get tested to begin with, you can actually find out what the problem is and solve it directly.
Do you have any stats on like North Americans for like every 10 North Americans? What is the probability for every 10 that somebody has a deeply rooted issue on a microscopic molecular level in the microbiome?
In terms of like real severe issues, no, I don't. But I do have statistics in terms of 30 to 40% of Americans will experience IBS-like symptoms at some stage in their life, and a lot of them experience them continuously for stages in their lives.
Gotcha.
So, like, it's probably the most dominant thing that I deal with is digestive complaints, and people tend to forget how that actually affects all the different goals that people are trying to achieve. So when people talk about, I want to get lean, I want to get muscly, I want to feel good, I want to sleep, I could show you every single link, how the gut affects everything. People talk regularly, like, my cholesterol's high, my this is high, but I live a good life, and so on. And then you realize they got really bad digestive problems, and you realize then how that actually affects cardiovascular function. It's huge. Like, the link's huge now.
So you're not going to know unless you do it at some point in your life and get the actual internal insights. And if you don't manage it and it's there, then, you know, not tackling this potential issue could lead to things that are much worse, such as like colon cancer and, you know, some of the other things that come along down the line. Yeah.
If you look at the, so they've got like what are called axis. So like there's a gut brain axis, a gut liver, a good kidney, a good cardiovascular. So like the gut has a link to every single organ in a very, very effective way. So when you look at, now cause and effect, sometimes they don't really know, but when you look at the studies around, especially the stuff like kidney disease, liver disease, cardiovascular disease, they all have the vast majority of them have a gut component.
Makes sense.
For sure.
Thanks, Phil.
No worries. Gabe?
Hey, Greg. Thanks, man. Love the info. Just one question I had that I think I'm discovering, you know, I guess on my own is, do you have any insight as far as coffee intake, timing of supplements, and like keeping it away from meals? Because one thing I have seen digestively is, right, you know, caffeine's kind of like a jump starter, we'll say, for some of us in the morning. But it's primarily, you know, I do my workout in the morning. Then I'm, you know, taking my post-workout supplements, eating that post-workout meal, and that's probably when I start having that first cup. After, you know, I always do it after nutrition, kind of blunt a little cortisol action. I just love the coffee. I don't really need it, but I just love it. But then sometimes I'll experience, you know, the emptying, and it's like in my head, like, did I just throw away all those pills I threw down the hatch? Like, how quick is that? Just any thoughts on that?
So whether it actually throws away all the pills. So like if you get gastric, like what they call gastric dumping. So if it happens within half an hour post eating, it's called gastric dumping. And in those circumstances, yeah, you tend to lose the vast majority of the nutrition that which you take in at that time. The reason for that, though, is normally in most circumstances, too much fat and too much calories at the same time. Or you're not treating the cephalic phase of eating with respect, I suppose. So the cephalic phase is actually the sitting, relaxing, and chewing your food phase. So I've seen gastric dumping a few times throughout my career, I suppose you want to call it. And a lot of the time it has to do with really high fat intake at one time or just too many calories.
So, yeah, I try to keep fats away in that meal. It's mostly the typical is oats, whey protein scoop, and just like frozen berries. That's it. You know, try to keep fats away. But I just think for me, it was like, I think it's the coffee. The only thing I've new introduced is a fish oil, but it's not enough fat, I don't think, for that.
You'll normally notice issues. Oh, no, it wouldn't be from the fish oil. No. I'm talking about like high fat meals. So you're right there. And so like in that circumstance, I probably would look at the coffee because as most people know, it increases what's called like peristalsis. So it increases the motion and the churning of your small intestine. Now, it probably shouldn't cause it to that extent, but I would try taking that out first to see if that has the effect. And then like, and I don't always promote this, but like, a lot of the time, if you've got really high cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, after you train, sometimes shoveling a lot of food down your throat straight away isn't the best approach for some people because that leads to increased gastric emptying.
Appreciate it. I'll keep you updated. We'll talk. Thanks.
No problem. We good, fellas? if any of you guys have any other questions, brother, fellas, you can find me on, I'm in the Telegram group anyway. So if you want to contact me directly and ask me questions, that's no problem at all. Lewis, you just popped in. You okay, bud? So yeah, if you guys have any questions going down the line, don't hesitate. You can drop me a line. More than happy to sit and talk to you about any of the issues that you have.
Yeah, I'll hit you up, Greg, because you guys sent me a test a while.
Lost you, buddy.
It's so daunting. The test itself, it was like, you know, blood and stool and, you know, like it's a bunch of stuff. And I never was able to follow through with that. So I'd like to kind of get a little help with that.
Yeah, no problem. Which ones did we send you?
It's been a while. Oh, here it is. The Genova Diagnostics.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. They are daunting.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like so much I couldn't even get it done, but I'd like to get it done.
Yeah. Drop me a line for sure. We'll get it done.
Sounds good, Greg. Thanks.
All right, brother.
All right, you guys. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, guys. Anybody else? No,
I'm looking forward to it.
Glad to hear it, Henry.
Hey, sorry, I have a quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're talking about digestion and gut health and microbiome. Did you touch on like environmental impacts, things that we could do or things that we should avoid environmentally to, you know, optimize things?
Okay, yeah, so you can go through, there's a lot of different things, unfortunately, now, which tend to have massive effects on immune system, hormonal system, a lot of different things that tend to have an effect. So if you look at pollution is one of them. So if you live in a big city, obviously it's hard to avoid, but you can use HEPA air filters are pretty good, especially in the room that you spend the most time in. So whether that's bed or if you have an office in the house, using filters is a really effective way at doing that. Avoiding heavy metals is always a major thing as well. So if you eat an awful lot of canned fish, tends to be an issue with mercury. If you have mercury amalgams, I don't know if anybody would still have them anymore, but some people might. They can leak into your system quite effectively and can be pretty devastating. If you look at stuff like carpets, curtains, some of the stuff that you might use in your house for cleaning products, some of the aftershave you use. Now, where do you start? Don't pull up your carpets and everything to start. It's avoid the things that you know that you can do easily. So I use HEPA filters in the house. They're pretty effective. I do have wooden floors, which I'm lucky already. So look at everything that you can change immediately, I guess. And eating organic food can be helpful as well in terms of pesticides. Hope that's all right. We done? Okay, guys. Thank you all. I really appreciate you hanging around and asking questions. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. It's pushing on midnight here. I'm going to bed.
All right. Good night.
Love you all.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, bye, Greg. Guys.